The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Ridge. Listen, man, I feel terrible because I left my Ridge wallet in the car. But I must tell you, I destroy wallets. That's what I do. Like, if you are trying to identify me as an animal, one of my primary characteristics would be he destroys wallets as a practice. I don't even know how I do it. Like, I don't do anything special with them, but by the end of a year, if I've even kept a wallet that long, it looks like somebody was using it to train an attack dog. And I don't know what that is, but Ridge Wallet, my God, it has somehow held up. It feels like I just got it yesterday. These things are like the most durable wallet of all time, and it's compact. It's compact. Not some big old giant stupid wallet. You feel like you're sitting on a little pillow all day, smushing it, getting that ass heat on it, melting down the fibers with your flatulence. Not a Ridge. Ridge wallets are insane. You got to try it out. But now, Ridge has just released the Ridge 2.0, the most refined version of the Ridge wallet. It's 10% lighter, and they've made it even more modular with improved cash straps, money clips, and the AirTag attachments. That's right. You could stick a little AirTag on the thing, and you won't lose your wallet anymore. It's made with premium materials like aluminum, titanium, and carbon fiber. Over 50 colors and styles to choose from. Of course, I picked Black Power Wallet. I don't know if they even want me to talk about this, but you got to try their chargers. Check this baby out. Woo! This thing is so good. Look at that. Just sticks to the back of your phone. Beautiful. Built-in chargers. A readout here, so you know how much is charges left on the thing. And it's, I don't know, man. It holds a ton of battery life. Sorry, Ridge. I don't even know if you want me to read that. So don't just get the wallet. Get the charger. For a limited time, Ridge is having their huge Black Friday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get up to 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's Ridge.com for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them the DTFH sent you. We're going to jump right into this episode. Today's guest is the host of the amazing podcast, You Made It Weird. I just got to spend a week with him at a Ram Dass retreat in Hawaii. He's one of the coolest people ever. Everybody, please, open your third eyes and spray as much astral jizz as you can right into the mouth of the very sweet Pete Holmes. Thank you so much for driving up here and doing the podcast. It's so great to see you.
Great to see you. Great to be here. You don't have to thank. I've been looking forward to. I'm so glad you wanted to do it. I had three thoughts and they all started to come out.
What three thoughts?
Thanks for having me. Don't worry about it. I've been looking forward to it. And I tried to say them all at once. What I mean is thanks for having me. Oh God, I've ruined everything. I'm just so stoked. Whenever we sit down. I squeaked a chair.
It doesn't matter.
It's gonna. People are turning it off. They don't want to hear what we have to say.
People might like it. There's that new thing people are into called, I don't remember what it is.
ASMR?
Yeah.
That wasn't it. Nobody's getting off on that. You know what my ASMR thing is?
What?
Getting measured. Like if somebody's tailoring you, like very like the slip of the plastic tape, and it's not. You'd think it would be getting touched, but it's just knowing that somebody's focusing so intently on your shoulder.
Wow,
not the inseam. Inseam's amateur.
Can you explain what it is? I don't really understand it. I've watched the videos. And
it's
just crackling, crunching thing.
I remember. I don't know if I've talked about this on my own podcast. I remember when I was maybe 15, 14, 13, even one of those. The age where everybody's still kind of gay. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
You don't know what you are.
Yeah.
But I knew for sure that I definitely got the feeling that I was supposed to be straight.
Right.
Because that's just how, it was the 80s, man.
Sure.
It's a different time.
Yeah.
But I remember, I also went to a very, very, very hippie progressive grade school, and I had more gay teachers than I had straight teachers. That's true. So there was no, like, don't be gay from them.
Right.
And no direct don't be gay from my parents. But I got a little don't be gay from my church, certainly. And I remember thinking one of the few times in my life, I was like, am I gay? And it was an ASMR thing. Because there was a kid in my class, and the way he talked, he had a very high, I don't want to say girlish, but he sounded like a girl. Remember when we were little boys and everybody on the phone would call you ma'am because your balls...
Never stopped for me, buddy.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
You don't get ma'am.
Are you kidding? I haven't gotten this... If I'm in, no one says, listen to my voice. You think when I'm calling someone, someone's like, yes, sir, I must be talking to a lumberjack.
Of course, I'm listening to it through earphones right now. Never would I think you were a lady.
Well, that's.
And I think Billy Joel, Billy Joel sounds like a lady to me.
Close your eyes.
Okay.
Okay. Pretend to be like, just like, I don't know, a Ramada that I'm calling. Just.
Okay, ready?
Ding, ring, ring.
Thank you for calling the Ramada Bridgeton. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hey,
should I ask for your name?
No,
would blow the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. We'll try it one more time.
Okay, ready? I won't get fancy with it.
Okay, here we go.
Hello, the Ramada. This is Dave.
Hey, can you send me to room service, please?
I sure can, ma'am.
See?
Chickens are the fish of the land, and fish are the chickens of the sea. I can see that. He had a very high voice.
He had a high voice.
And he was talking, and it wasn't sexually arousing. And that's the kind of umami quality of ASMR, is that it is arousing. It's very titillating, but you don't want to jerk off.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with your dick.
Right.
You're just kind of like, oh, why am I feeling kind of an orgasm-y kind of feel? I'm not very sensitive.
I watched some last night, and I've kind of, this is just a bag.
What about this?
Oh, yeah. Or this.
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
I get it.
A Bob Ross painting is the ultimate everyman. Everyone understands.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Why is it so soothing for like a pretty dry brush on a canvas? Why is that kind of tickle the base of your nuts?
Great explanation of it.
Oh.
Great. And besides, when you're in... I was raised by a psychologist. Yes. And so I was given
your mom or your dad?
My mom, psychologist. So she sort of, at the time, you know, that like statistically, little boys, teens will jerk off with each other sometimes.
Or, oh, yeah, yeah.
And it has no... It doesn't mean you're gay or you're straight. It just right. means whatever. You're
a bro
like,
job.
Yeah, a bro job.
You got a bro job.
So that happens. And so I remember my mom would like give me these books with like, look, it's okay if this has happened. I think she thought I must have like jerked off with a kid, which I never did.
Yeah.
But I think she was trying to like, or maybe she thought I was gay. I don't know. But
yeah.
she was just sort of like, so I, my same thing, super open-minded.
Yeah.
No sense of like, there being like a, anything wrong with it. Yeah. But I was, you know, at that time, people's minds right now, I guess millennials as they're called, if they knew how fucking homophobic the time that you and I came out of was,
it would blow their minds.
It would explode their brains.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's shifted so much that right. people like listen to like old Eddie Murphy jokes.
I know. No, I'm gonna go suck a dick. I think I'm having not deja vu where it's kind of trippy and more fun. I wish I were, because that would be cool, and I'd be like, maybe I lived in this house. Man. That would be more cool. I just think last time we talked, recorded or not, we talked about Eddie Murphy's. How we were all kind of fine with that.
Totally fine.
Like and like, I the word sissy was around. Like, you don't really hear sissy anymore.
Yeah,
sissy. But, like, people would yeah. be like, he's a sissy.
Yeah.
And, like, that wasn't, it wasn't bad to say that. Like, I mean, it was bad, but no one would be like, hey, chuck it.
You were allowed to, like, it was not such a ridiculous thing to shove them or to
yeah.
verbally abuse them.
I say that like I shoved. I didn't shove, but not that I need to protect myself. I would be honest, if I shoved, there was no shoving. I've always been, like, a real... kind of a sweet kid, or was it a sweet kid? But yeah, there could be shoving for sure.
Shoving, and there was. I'm trying to think of what else. There was like a general. Bill Hicks. You know, you've ever seen Bill the Letterman set that mm-hmm. he finally released
that they wouldn't air? Yeah,
and even Bill Hicks was like clearly homophobic, and
yeah,
you know, so. Or at least the joke was.
You know, I think we've talked about this before. I think there's something really interesting going on in the... I'm not trying to Duncan Trussell Family Hour this topic. This is honestly just my
Please
thing.
Do.
There's something going on with sexuality and the general unconscious mind or whatever, is that we have a lot of anger and we have a lot of confusion, and it's a really sore subject for most people. Specifically, like, we've talked about, like, our language, telling somebody to get fucked or fuck
yeah,
you.
Right.
Like, you get fucked, you're the thing that receives,
yeah.
and I'm the dick and I give yep. the fucking.
Right.
And that's why I think we really, I'm not speaking for myself, it just seems like we don't like gay men. They're more threatening to us because they're being fucked. Whereas, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, the man degrades himself to the woman's position of getting
Whoa.
Fucked. Of course, that's not true. Like, I'm not representing my own case here.
Yeah, I get
but
it.
But we have a real problem with things that get fucked, things that are adapted and change. And women are nothing if not adaptive. They shed their ovaries. They're bleeding.
Right.
They're literally in a flow and a cycle.
Yeah.
And they tend, I'm not saying all women, they tend to be more nurturing and understanding. And
yeah.
a lot of the relationships I know, I don't think it's just cultural. The woman tends to be better at, like, kind of finding a finesse in the life of the couple. And the guy tends to be more of the idiot that's just banging blocks into square holes and stuff like
that.
The
yeah.
woman is the elegant
right.
Energy. Or, you know, guys can have that as well.
That's the balance. You know, that is the dream. And that's the balance. The dream is to have that inside yourself. And,
that
and,
balance. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to have that in that if there were a house inside of you where the masculine you and the feminine you are hanging out.
Right.
There, it would be nice if there was some kind of balance there. But for most people, there isn't.
Yeah.
For most people, it's extreme. It's slanted one way or the other.
I think that's really dangerous. I think it's very – I was just talking in therapy. I was actually quoting you, and when you blew my mind and really – I like saying saved my life, you know, saved a portion of my life in helping me look at my ego differently. I called my ego Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood.
Okay.
That's really what my ego looks like.
Sure.
And when we were in Maui, remember, I don't mind if people have heard this before. I've heard this before.
They don't care.
I think people need to hear that as often as possible, is I was getting really hard on my Plainview, this tenacious, driven... The guy, the part of me that wants everything for himself and nothing for anyone else, he's a real monster, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Monster, you know, if you give him too much control of your life. So we were talking about feeding the plain view. And you want to give him just enough to keep him able to protect you or help you, but you don't want him to take over. So the reason I brought that up was the idea that I find it very helpful to break my psychology down into many different avatars, many different kind of manifestations. One of them's plain view. One of them is a sort of childish Pete. One of them is what we're calling a feminine energy Pete. I actually think I'm more feminine energy. Maybe not more. I don't know. But I know there's two sides to me. There's the plain view, and that's definitely this masculine kind of asshole.
Yeah.
And then I really think there's a socially intelligent kind of tent-dwelling sweetie that likes gossiping and wearing fine silks.
What? I don't understand. I understand everything but the tent-dwelling part.
Well, that's a reference to Jacob and Esau, a Bible story that I really like. And Jacob dwelt in tents.
Okay.
And Esau was red and hairy and was a good hunter. But they're twins. It's a great Bible story in Genesis. And Jacob, I relate very much to this, was smart and could relate, obviously had a lot of social intelligence, but wasn't a good hunter. This is me. I can't fix your car and I can't fillet. I tried to, I don't eat meat, but my mom had a turkey and I was trying to carve it on Thanksgiving for her. I couldn't do it. Like, there were just bone joints that I was just like, I don't know, I need a YouTube video.
You haven't done it a lot.
I haven't done it a lot. Certainly I could learn. But I related to that character of this guy who might not be physically stronger than his brother in the story, but had this sort of, I keep using the word finesse and elegance.
Yes, right.
And a little bit of a, it's not manipulative, but he knew how to talk to people and know what they wanted and what they were feeling. And if you can have that third position perspective on two people talking, I think you, that's why he gets the blessing from his father. So his father's going to bless the older brother because he was born first.
Yes.
But then Jacob came in, very Bible, very Shakespearean. Dad's going blind. Jacob goes in at the time of the blessing and convinces his father that he is Esau.
Yeah.
And gets this blessing.
Right.
And that was a really, really, really big deal.
Clever. He tricked his father.
He was a trickster and he tricked his father, but his father was like, well, he did it. He tricked me and that's the blessing. You can't void those.
Only get one.
So he gets it. And that's why people are telling stories about Jacob, and people know Bible stories about Jacob. Not too many people know more than one story about Esau.
Have you heard the idea that that's right, Esau was the, this is the story of the hunter-gatherer versus the agrarian, and the split that happened in human culture where people started planting food, and some people wanted to hunt, and the people who wanted to hunt for whatever reason and wander, and, you know, it's really interesting how in the Bible, in the Old Testament particularly, there is something about the wandering life that seems to be unwanted. Because you have the wandering Jews, and when they're wandering looking for their home, they feel cursed. You have...
These are the dwarves in Lord of the Rings.
Dwarves in Lord of the Rings.
They're the Jews.
Their
home. Learned this. My friend Yoni just told me this. He's like, they lose their land. They're always craving for their old rituals and their old place and their old people, but they keep getting problems.
This is the Cain and Abel story, because when Cain killed Abel, he was sent east of Eden to the land of Nod, and his descendants were musicians. And but again, the mark of Cain, the wandering life, you'll never have a home. And it's just interesting, isn't it, that this wandering sort of life is, in the, at least in the Bible, is looked at as a kind of, like, what is it, this dream of home? It's been something I've been thinking about quite a bit.
I know, I think about that too. I thought about that on the ride up, because at one point I got lost. And I went, where the fuck am I? Just kind of an overwhelming... I say this to you because I don't want you to feel bad, but the truth is it was just a flash. I was like, where am I?
Right.
Into your new house. I thought I was going to Atwater.
It's confusing.
And then I just went, where could you be? Do you understand?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This idea of home, people like romantic. Like I say to Valerie, my girlfriend, I'm like, you know, home is a person. It's not a place. Like we have a home, but like when I'm with her,
yeah.
I feel at home. And I really think that's, you know, just a boiled down version of the feeling of when I'm with God or when I'm in communion with Divine Mother or whatever you want to call it, then you're at home. So it really is this sort of feeling rather than a place. So I'm curving up the hill and I'm getting angry because I'm far from my home where yeah. I shit and where my farts are in the couch and where my food is.
Right.
And then I just remembered you're here. That's one of the things you and I talk about dreams a lot. In a dream, you're never upset to be where you are, even if you're terrified. I mean, in a nightmare, maybe. But in a dream, you're just kind of fascinated that you're there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But here, we're always robbing ourselves of the joy of the moment by going, I'll be happy when I get to Duncan's.
Right.
I'll be happy when we're doing the podcast.
Yeah.
And even now, this is the hierarchy of needs that Ram Dass teaches about. He's like, oh, I'll be happy when I've done a good job.
Yeah.
And when Duncan tells me that was good. And then I'll be happy, not on the ride home, because then I'll be in transit. I'll be happy when I get home
right.
and I can eat. What am I going to fucking do? This is that thing. We're robbing ourselves. We're lying to ourselves. It's the next thing that's going to get us. It's the next thing that's going to get us. Ram Dass's example is like, I'll be happy when I watch TV. Okay. Oh, now I need popcorn. Okay?
Yeah.
Now I need a drink.
Okay? Right.
Now I need ice cream. And he does this thing that I love. I told him this in Maui. I was like, this is one of your bits, is that he goes, life is...
Right.
And the thing that I've been tripping out lately is, this is all him, he says, the question isn't whether or not meeting your needs makes you happy, because it certainly does in the short term. But the question is whether or not meeting your needs makes you any less happy. You know what I'm saying? So it's that sort of surrender of this idea and this illusion of culture and good living. And we're trying to string together as many sipping tea on the porch moments as we can and minimize as many like overtime at the office moments as we can. When Ram Dass and all of these enlightened people are trying to say, as Maharaji says, enjoy everything. Okay, that's one of his teachings. Enjoy everything. Stop robbing yourself. You're lying to yourself that I'll be happier when I get to Duncan's, when I could just be, and I was, happy curving up some weird road in Pasadena.
Well, now, this concept that you're talking about here, this, which is talked about a bunch, I actually talked about it in the intro of the podcast, I'm glad we're talking about it, the non-locality, the non-geographical locality of home.
Mm.
It's really a curious thing, because if you think about the phenomena of being in between, like what you're saying, classic example, always traffic, then you're dealing with a very specific form of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me a lot of the feeling of wanting to check your cell phone. So like if you have your cell phone in your pocket and you become
exactly
aware,
right.
It's a pulling.
It's a machine. I love my cell phone too. We all love our cell phones, but it really is this tiny, perfect manifestation, materialization of the
right,
constantly. And you're the one that told me when you get a text, they put you in a brain scan, you get dopamine.
Yeah.
So you're literally just being addicted
to that
moment.
But you're so when you feel that gravity of your phone, or you, when you feel the gravity of this temporal planet that you've put yourself in the orbit of, which is this point in the future where, like you're saying, you get to relax.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really curious to me that there's a tangible sense of being pulled. It's an unpleasant sensation. Mm-hmm. Like when you're in traffic, the point that you've created in the future after traffic, you can feel it.
I've never heard that articulated, but
pulling
absolutely.
You.
Yep.
And it hurts.
It hurts. It's suffering.
It's suffering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, it's not like hurts like Hellraiser where the chains with the fish hooks on them shoot out and you rip you to pieces.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in that spectrum of
it feels physical.
It feels physical.
This is something I just heard on the way over. I was listening to some Rami D, because as I told you, I'm a little bit pot hungover today. So
yes.
I'm a little foggy. I was trying to get into a good space for you. And I was thinking, this great Ram Dass quote. He goes, most of our emotions are in the service of our minds. And they're usually just there to scare us and put us back into a fearful place.
Yeah.
And I just think that's so interesting. If we can separate spirit, your true essence, your awareness, no matter what you believe, I think we can agree you are your awareness. That's where you are. And if you can separate that from your mind and its agenda, you can realize when you're in traffic, it wants to kind of fuck with you. It wants, for better or worse, evolutionary, habitual, it wants to tell you when you get home and the keys hit the table, that's when you can feel good.
Right.
And I get it. I understand that. Even as I say that, I'm like, yeah, keys on the table. That's a good feeling. But the truth is, where could you go? Where could you go? That goes back to the idea of a dream. Where could you go? I know it's kind of obvious, and sometimes it feels kind of light and fluffy and not very substantial to just be like, the eternal now, man. That's all that exists. That's where you are.
Yeah.
But when you really can, I've likened it to holding your breath. There's an awareness that arises even from being in traffic that can be very, very blissful. Because where can you go?
Right.
I'm haunted by my parents. I don't mean to shit on my parents, but like, I think we all have kind of kooky parents, or at least we're aware of the idea of kind of kooky older parents.
Yes.
They start getting in their ways, and you see them really, their rational minds can start to really overtake, I think.
Yeah.
You see that in old people. It's like, I want my tea a certain temperature. God damn it. That's how I like it every morning.
Sure.
So you start to see that. So I really see in them, they'll be like, oh, we want to go to Rome. And I'm like, that old thing, wherever you go, there you are. You can't go anywhere. You're already there.
Right.
You're there. And right. I'm here.
Right.
And relax. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yield. That's what love is saying yes to it.
Yeah.
Fear is saying, no, I shouldn't be in traffic.
Right.
The flight shouldn't be delayed. I'm supposed to be with my sweetheart. Damn it, it's her birthday.
Yeah.
You're here. Surrender. But even better than surrender, say yes. That great Ram Dass story, I'm sure you know it, from being on the road, he was touring so much that he was really getting homesick. Yeah. Remember?
Yeah, tell
and
it.
And he walked into, I always picture it as Howard Johnson, because it's like the 70s, and he goes in and he's really bummed out because he wants to go home. And then he had what we're talking about, this realization. Where is home? What is not God? Where is not home?
Right.
Right? And so he got up from his hotel room to reset himself, left, walked down the hallway, went in the parking lot, then came right back, opened the door to his hotel, and went, I'm home.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, that's where you are. In a dream, you never go, this would be better if. You just surrender. I think that's what makes dreams so dreamy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Because you say yes to it.
You just say yes.
Right. Because you're fascinated. You know I love talking about dreams. That to me is, I think it's a huge key to spiritual understanding, is because you're in a reality. And every time I lucid dream, this is my epiphany. Every single time I go, this is exactly like reality. So here I am. I'll be data. You understand? I am the source data here.
Yeah.
I lucid dream all the time. And every time I do, I can't believe that I look around and it looks exactly like reality. So where is Pete? Pete then is awareness. And in that moment, he's in this dream. So that awareness can be transplanted to lots of different places.
Yeah.
And then it helps you take this less seriously. Just when I was curving up the hill, I got mad. Where the fuck am I? And then I went, it's a dream. It's a dream.
Right.
Then you look to your right and you got a gorgeous view. Relax.
This is very uncomfortable for people, I think, because so much of life is built on this. Essentially, you're talking about masturbation. You're talking about
it's all tits.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all tits.
You're talking about, I'm going to jerk off. And in traffic, I'm kind of jerking off, even though masturbation is pleasurable. But in traffic, you're sort of, this is what my, you're sort of building up this energy form, and then you're allowing yourself to release it when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of society is based 100% on people
later
fooling themselves into thinking that this particular kind of orgasm, whatever you want to call it, can only happen from going to a concert, from getting the new car,
mm-hmm,
from buying some brand new thing from getting a specific meal. All of it is based. So
come later.
Yeah.
You can come later.
Yeah, but right now you're miserable.
That's right.
And you're going to feel better as soon as you get this new phone. You're going to feel.
Right.
And so when you look at, like, I think Zizek talks about this in his documentary on Netflix. Have you ever seen Zizek?
Kind
of, no. It's kind of like.
Should I watch it?
Yeah, check it out.
How do you spell it?
I spell his name wrong. It's actually pronounced Zizek. Forgive me, guys. This is me. You know I fuck everything up. No offense to the geniuses out there. I'm going to say his fucking name wrong. I actually read in some like snotty article like this 10 intellectual mistakes you could really embarrass yourself saying Zizek wrong. I'll say fucking Zizek how I want to.
That's right.
He's a genius. And he's got a great documentary on Netflix.
That's what I'll do today.
But he talks about this culture where if you look at like a Coke commercial and you see that it's not the Coke, man. It's the thing happening around the drinking of the Coke. It's a celebratory moment, an ultimate, just incredible. You know, they tie so much to drinking a fucking Coke.
It's almost always at least partially sex. I really think the is sexual. I think all of it is trying to remind you of the idea of an orgasm.
Coke. It almost smells like cock. Sounds like cock almost.
If you want to get real weird, I think candy bars are not necessarily made intentionally. But I think the fact that they look like veiny dicks is sometimes used to the advantage
of the advertising. Certainly what everyone in the advertising agency
would say. Huge Snicker bars cracking through walls of chocolate, and you're just like, that's me!
Yeah.
And it's trying to take you back to that place. I'm interested that sometimes when you're jerking off, one of the things that's turning you on is how turned on you are.
Right.
Because you're like, I'm killing
it. It's happening.
So it's trying to take you, or during sex, it's not just jerking off, but sometimes you're like, oh my God, I'm so hard. And that's part of the enjoyment.
Watching all the physiological shit that's going down.
You also just feel like, I've done it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it, and I am the Snickers bar, and I'm coming now. But Ram Dass, I'm just, by the way, if I say every time I'm quoting Ram Dass that I'm quoting Ram Dass, this will be a 9-hour podcast. So just assume that I'm quoting Ram Dass this whole time.
Yeah.
But he talks about, what if you lived in a realm where you were coming constantly? The feeling of an orgasm, the feeling of a Coke, the feeling of a Snickers bar, the feeling of a new car feels good. That's fine. I understand that.
Yeah.
But what if you were in a place where that was just what normal felt?
Yes.
Like? You're just always coming. He also, how long before that gets old? How long before people start having podcasts talking about how to escape this reality? Because coming just feels like the baseline.
Well, someone committed suicide. You know, you can look it up. There's a documentary about a woman who has a disorder where she has like a zillion orgasms a day. She's constantly coming.
Oh my God.
And it was very painful. And she shot herself or hung herself. She couldn't live in that life because it was a form of seizure. Like maybe it's like a kind of epilepsy or something. Mm. So yeah, right.
You don't want that. That's a lie too.
It's the intermittent. Well, the thing that's very, I think, incredibly scary for people when they start thinking about this is if you're two pieces of this. Number one, imagine this paranoid fantasy. Since the moment you are born into if you live in any kind of Western part of the world where there's commercials on TV trying to sell you shit, then you have been exposed to the most high-powered form of conditioning that exists, which is the TV show that you're watching.
Which you already have an affinity towards.
Gets you nice and lubed up.
Yeah.
Opens up gets you relaxed, puts you in the perfect state for
you're
being conditioned.
You're in that place you like to be.
Perfect place. You're vulnerable.
I'm in the 60s madman.
Vulnerable. Yeah. Talk about getting penetrated.
Yeah.
Your legs are open.
Yeah.
And
the show lubes up your pussy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You are ready to get fucked.
Yep.
As we say. And then the commercial, you realize, is not about the product as much as a story.
Mm-hmm.
And the story, regardless of what the product is you are not happy as you could be.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story. And you will be happy when this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And but they don't say that. They show it. So you see like this people drinking Coca-Cola as though they're drinking the blood of Christ and will have eternal life from now on. I've just discovered that planet Earth is a spaceship, that we are all infinite beings in a great ocean of truth, and God is real, and God loves us. Cherry Coke. That's the thing. There's all these people, that's their reaction to this lifestyle of Coca-Cola or whatever the thing happens to be, the pharmaceutical commercials, heightened colors, a family, older people, and enjoying a very stable home life. But again and again and again, the message is you could be happier.
Right.
And so when you realize this, how sinister that is, that from the moment you were born, if you're a TV watcher and have been around television, you've been in your most vulnerable state being shown a version of life that is based on an absolute lie, which is that you will be happy when, rather than you can be happy no matter what.
Right.
And in fact, the more of this shit that you get, the more you're going to be confused. It doesn't matter if you're in traffic. It doesn't matter if you're at home. It doesn't matter if you're anywhere at all.
Right.
Because inside of you is the Garden of Eden.
Right.
And so you never hear that. But maybe that's the truth. And if that's the truth, then anyone trying to teach children or adults or anybody a different version of that story has to be a liar. And who is Satan? Pete Holmes? Well, the father of lies. And so
I thought you were saying I was Satan. Yeah, no, the liar, yeah.
So then you see when you're watching these commercials or you're around any single person who's telling you, you need me to be happy. You need me to be happy. If I'm not in your life, you're not going to be happy anymore. Mm-hmm. If you're around anyone who's giving you that bullshit, or if you're giving anyone that bullshit, you'll be sorry when I'm gone. Yeah. You're going to cry all day long. Cut your wrists and blow your brains. Any kind of bullshit like that, you have become a disciple of Satan. Because the only message really can be, you can feel good no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
On a level that you've never imagined, if the only way you've been letting yourself feel good are in these intermittent moments where you've decided that reality is lined up perfectly around you in just the right way for you to be cozy.
Right. That's the porch. That's iced tea on the porch. If only I could be on the porch drinking iced tea. Sort of thing. Then I'll be happy. And I want to string as many of those together as possible.
If only, and then the iced tea's got to have six handcrafted ice cubes.
How many times, though, do we have to hear the story? How many times do we have to do the field research to buy the thing and realize that it doesn't do anything for
us? A lot.
A lot. And I think that's what we're partially here to do. I think we're here to continually forget our divinity, remember our divinity, forget, remember. And as Ram Dass would say, there's no glitch in the system. And the suffering and the lies and all that, I think, are part of it. But extricating yourself from that is also part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's on one level, it is a real adventure and it's lots of fun.
Right.
On another level, It's a really...
It's a drag?
I mean, this is such a rudimentary way to say it. But if it's suddenly a door opened up in reality right now, and the creator of this simulation that we exist in whatever form or multitudes of forms the thing happens to be, emerged.
Yep.
And gave us a chance to talk. In the back of your head, you're going to be looking at him or her or it in the same way you kind of look at Obama, right? Like, a lot of good about you, but you accidentally killed a bunch of kids, didn't you?
Wait, that's what you say to God?
That's what I think about Obama. And with God, I'm going to be thinking like, okay, I get it. You put me in a fucking lava pit of suffering.
You know, it's funny that you say that. You were talking about Genesis stories. And it took me, I'm 36, and I probably read this a couple years ago, so it took me 33, 34 years before I read Joseph Campbell's interpretation of the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. And it's in The Power of Myth, the book. I don't know if it's in the series, but it's in the book, and it's amazing. It's in the first half, that's all I can say, and that's all I remember. But it talks about, you know, the typical Christian interpretation of the Garden of Eden is there we were with God, and everything was perfect, and then we sinned. We ate from the tree of knowledge, and then we were kicked out.
Yeah.
Joseph Campbell interprets it completely differently, and it speaks to you and your angst towards God, which I understand, which I actually think is a mislabeling of your yearning towards union with the beloved.
Absolutely.
That is the pain that we're all experiencing constantly. That is something Rob Bell and I were talking. It's like everybody's suffering. Everybody's suffering.
Yes.
So suffer for something that you love. Suffer to create something you love. Right. You're not going to get rid of your suffering necessarily. Maybe you will. Maybe you'll become... Although Maharaji said his life was full of suffering as well.
So he said he would pray for suffering.
Everybody. That's right. Because we're not here to not suffer.
Sure.
And we're also not here to all agree. But anyway.
You know what? Can I just say something real quick?
Yeah.
If you go to somebody's party... And one of the first things they say is, guys, we're not here to not suffer. You're going to think, well, maybe this isn't the best fucking party then.
Yeah, no.
I know what you mean. I'm humanizing a super...
I hear that.
I'm humanizing things. Keep going. I'm sorry.
No, but no. This is a big epiphany for me. I sat down with this pastor. I was doing his podcast. And I asked him, is a perfect world where everyone believes in Christ? And he said, yes. And I was like, I don't think that's what we're here to do. I don't think we came here... we came here for diversity. Every
right.
story, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, we're going around and finding the other, the different, the exotic, the novel.
Yes.
So we're not just here to not suffer and not have, as you're saying, children killed. I don't want to get too specific, but you said that about Obama.
Yeah.
But anyway, Joseph Campbell talking about the Garden of Eden, instead of it being like, we fucked up, we were with God and then we fucked up, he looks at the Garden of Eden as the pre-birth place. And that's a pretty easy buy for me. I'm
sure.
Like, there we are, the Garden of Eden, this place that stop looking for it on earth. You're not understanding.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's where we were one with God.
Yes.
And we were completely, we didn't know duality. We didn't know man, woman. We didn't know naked, clothed. We did know bad tree, good trees. We knew that one.
Yeah.
That was our one thing. But then we ate from the apple and then we were not kicked out of paradise. I know it's harsher here than in the pre-birth place, certainly, but it includes the human in the decision to become incarnate. It's you saying, I was part of it.
Right.
I wasn't kicked here. I
That's
chose
cool.
to eat from the apple.
That's cool.
And I didn't come to hell. I came to the place where through suffering, through duality, through pain, I can learn more than I could about God in that place, in this place. And then afterwards, we'll go back to that place. And I don't want to talk about it, but hopefully we can just float around.
Well, I hope it involves some.
Talking
I hope it involves
it.
Some form of floating.
But do you understand that? That's you, Duncan, coming here to see what traffic feels like.
It's like your suffering is the vessel that holds your bliss. Like you need this... perimeter or something to experience it. Or, you know, I've heard, you know, I think Jack Kornfield in one of the episodes was talking about how if you want the great thing, this is the, like right now, it's so dumb to put it in the form of paying for a ticket. But right now, this is the part where you have to have this part to experience the great vastness for some reason. The way it works is you need this. And I get it. You know, I don't want to sound... like some sulky little shit, because
no,
I really do.
I get it.
I love it. It's just I do love existence, and I'm so happy to be alive.
But I remember being young and being like, why didn't God? Because this was when I was young and I was kind of right over the plate Christian. I was like, why didn't God start life in heaven? So that's a good question.
I felt it when I smoked DMT.
Why did he kick us out of here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why can't we be in the dome right all the time?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Was like, wait.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, you're making contact in some way, and it's this incredibly beautiful pre-creative state of pure potentiality.
Yeah.
And it's alive, and it seems to love you. But in my mind, there was a little bit of like, well, I guess you just get to hang out here all the time, huh?
Right.
I'll just head back. You're like some seal in the polluted waters.
Well, you
that
don't,
temporarily got picked up by.
As Ram Dass would say, you don't get to stay at the wedding banquet because your garments aren't pure enough. That's a Christ's parable about going to the wedding and feast and being kicked out because you weren't dressed properly.
Right.
So in his interpretation, that's an idea of purity and stuff and trying to be like a Maharaji and staying in that place all the time, even though you're in this form. But I get it. I want you to know that I get it.
Yeah.
I. feel that. And that's what I'm saying. I think we can't talk enough or offer solidarity enough towards the yearning that we're all feeling to be in one, and to be in oneness.
It's heartbreak, bud.
It's heartbreak. I've said this before, but we were yanked from something far worse than a vagina. You know what I mean? You were born and you were taken from your mother, but that was just the beginning of you being yanked from the garden, yanked from the pre-birth place,
yeah,
yanked from oneness and put into an illusion of separateness. It's a wonder we're not all crying constantly.
Babies are. Babies are crying.
I actually thought about that last night, and I was like, I really do think there's something to it. And the only way to calm the baby is to like overwhelm it with love so it will calm down and forget.
It's the when you see a baby crying and you wonder why the baby's crying, it's because it's experienced the great heartbreak of the universe.
Yeah.
And this heartbreak, this brokenheartedness, this innate human state, dukkha, I think, is what they call it in Buddhism. It's so interesting how there's nothing worse than to get your heart broken in real life. You know, it's like, so how many suicides, how many songs about it, how many tragic heartbreak stories are there? And it's like, this is the downgraded version. It's like what you're saying. It's like, if you think the heartbreak, any heartbreak you're experiencing in this human incarnation is an infinite.
It's a minnow bite, and you have a shark scar. You're gushing blood from a shark bite, and the minnow is, you're like, oh, Julie left.
And there's the gate around the Garden of Eden, and this is why they talk about how they set two angels at the gate, and there is this impenetrable wall around the Garden of Eden. I think that impenetrable wall is that feeling of heartbreak that you come into contact with if you're being truly honest about your situation in life, if you're being really, really completely honest with what's going down here,
right,
which is that this too you will be separated from. This separation that you have theoretically experienced from the great mother, this separation continues and continues and continues and continues until you let yourself be completely and absolutely brokenhearted, sobbing like a child. And this is why when they talk about the mystics, the way that it's explained is that you must want this reunification at the level that you want to breathe. You must want this reunification at the level that you, a billion times more than you've ever wanted anyone to text you.
Right.
And it's that level of heartbreak that you have to experience. And theoretically, in the great teachings that I've heard, that's when you get scooped up again. Mm. And that's when you finally get to come home. But man, woo, what a long journey, huh?
I know. And maybe it's just the mood we're in today, but I understand the weight of that. Ram Dass, if you took a shot every time I said Ram Dass, you'd be dead. But Ram Dass talks about a quote from one of his teachers, and he says, you're in school, you might want to take the curriculum. Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like, instead of resisting it, it's us in traffic. Yeah. We're doing it again. It's all tits. And what I mean by that, it's all tits, is even enlightenment is tits.
You're a tit man.
Yeah, or it could be pussy or whatever you want. But it's this idea. I was thinking last night, we smoked dope and I was coming down and it was actually great. I was closing my eyes and just watching visions. Like, just really, it's a practice. We could talk about that if you want. There's a real practice and it is love. And it's not, I'm not talking about taking psychedelics. I'm talking about watching the back of your eyes.
Yeah.
And when you start to see something incredible, you need to remain calm or it goes away. It's a real, it's a sliver of what I think it might be like to die, is to not get overwhelmed by the bardo. Is just a little rehearsal is psychedelics. A little rehearsal is smoking too much weed and going to bed, watching the back of your eyes sober. You can see some of the most glorious. I was at the bottom of a space shuttle taking off, but I couldn't see the shuttle. All I saw was the smoke going to an impossible blue aqua planet, and the sky was like, every star. It was amazing. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And it came after I even challenged my brain. I was like, what could I see?
Right.
Because I was feeling despondent. That's cool. I was like, what could you show me?
Yeah.
And it went, how about this, bitch? And I was like, ah! But then I panic and it goes away. But anyway, what was I saying? Take the curriculum.
Don't resist.
Watching. Oh, it's all tits. So one of the visions that I had, and it feels very LSD or mushrooms or whatever, is I was like, this is a trip. The people that I know, Shane Moss, etc., that smoke a lot of DMT, he's public about that. He's like, I could see you smoking something and coming here and learning equally profound lessons about the base nature of awareness.
Right.
And one of the things that's so trippy that we just don't even... Talking about it's all tits, it's all the other thing, even enlightenment. There's a sect of Buddhism that calls enlightenment the final disappointment. Isn't that great? Because you just keep chasing tits. And I was thinking, I saw Bob Barker, it was old, it was pre-Drew Carey, it was Bob Barker on The Price is Right, and I was like, they literally, we love setting up the game,
yeah,
stuff and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
And then we literally set up game shows where we have poor people play silly, very psychedelic, trippy, plinko games. And then we pull back a curtain in and say, we're going to give you a kitchen set. And then you jump up and dance because it's all just the carousel of bullshit.
Yes.
But then Bob Barker was like, and behind this curtain, we have enlightenment. It was just another thing. It's I'm still the beggar sitting on the box, yeah, of gold asking for spare change. I don't want enlightenment. I am enlightened, and right, I'm in my own fucking way because I keep waiting for something to save me.
Right.
When the guru is what's looking out of my eyes right now.
Right.
When self, God, and guru are one, I don't need Bob motherfucking Barker to say, and behind this one
is your guru,
is Buddha, is Maharaji, is Christ.
You've won a Buddha.
Coming out of a spaceship and saying, you're one of us. We love you. You did it. Good, yeah, job. So we just need to relax and take the curriculum and take the suffering. Again, you're right about the party, but the pain, I think, is one of those things that we didn't, if we're going with this thought experiment of the pre-birth place being a pain-free zone, because,
yeah,
you and God were blue paint and it just got blurred into one pile of blue paint.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, I'm blue paint.
Yeah.
You also weren't suffering. And I think we ate the apple to come here to meet people, to be people that don't believe in God.
Right.
To learn from a monster, to learn from a thief, to be a thief, to watch starvation and to experience loss. We're all in a thing that ends poorly.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I think you said this to me. This is one of the things you said the first time I did your podcast. You're like, you wouldn't put a quarter in a video game that lasted forever.
No.
You do. How long is this one? Well, it's like 100 years sometimes. You're like, yeah, you're really good.
Yeah, I love it, man. And I, you know what? No matter what, even if there is no after this or before this, and even if there is no intentionality, even if it's not a university where you're being taught some grand curriculum, it's still, this is what's going down.
Right.
And you got to accept it.
Well, that's love. That's saying yes to what is.
That's it. This is,
in cosmic traffic.
Cosmic traffic.
You and I are suffering because we're waiting. I'll just speak for myself. I'm suffering because I'm waiting to arrive somewhere.
We're not walking each other home. We're driving each other home in shit traffic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, Saraswati Marcus said that, Raghu's wife said, the bridge between suffering and grace is surrender. Mm. And that the moment you just accept it, here's what's happening, man. I don't care what your expectations were.
That's right.
There's no fucking, to quote Morrissey, there's no heavenly choir, not for you and not for me. Mm. We tried and we failed. We tried and we failed. No matter what it is, when you just accept, okay, you know what? My brain constructed a version of reality where everything was going to be the goddamn Macy's Day Parade. Mm. There was going to be some form of constant, never-ending, Tom Bombadil-level, Tolkien-esque communion with nature, domesticity and love in my life. But guess what? That's not what's happening. Mm-hmm. You're in a job you might not like. You're in a fucking relationship that might be weird. You're in a house that you wish you weren't in. It's got bed bugs and fleas. Mm-hmm. You're in a car that breaks down all the time. You're in a body that sometimes gets sick and will definitely get incredibly ill to the point that it's going to die. This is what's really happening.
That's right.
And the moment you just let go into that, it's quite nice.
You're taking your agenda out of it.
Take your agenda out, because that's what's torturing you. Yeah. It's not the fucking bed bugs torturing you. It's
that's why in the world, not of the world. That's the idea. You're playing. I'm a fierce player, Ram Dass says. I'm still playing. Maharaji would get angry. He wanted things. He wanted the bread to be delivered to the blah blahs, and you fucked up, and he yells at you.
Yeah.
But in it, but not of it, because when we become of it, and when we really start going, this is me. I'm Pete. I'm a personality, and you will love me. You will love what I do, and I will give myself comfort. When we let go of that, that's where you get these kung fu mystics, you know, like Jesus walking around and accepting what is.
Yeah.
Because
it's great. Because it's way better. It's when you realize you are torturing yourself with your expectation of how things should be.
Yeah.
You're tormenting yourself. That's the lash that you're using to whip yourself.
Right. Like David Bowie dies, right? And I'm not very familiar with him. But it was interesting to me that everybody was like, oh no. And I get it. It's sad. Anybody dying is sad.
Yeah.
This isn't like some comedic perspective where I don't give a shit.
Sure.
I do give a shit. Clearly an amazing artist, and I've appreciated some of his work. But I wasn't like a diehard fan. But like people are like, oh, he's gone. I'm like, we're all gone. We're all gone. You know what I mean? Like we did this exercise in Maui where Val and I sat across from each other and they had us repeat these things about just like me. This person's in a body,
just like me.
This person has pain, just like me. This person is afraid, just like me.
Yeah.
And this person will die, just like me. And Val and I are weeping, just like a gorgeous weep. This is another one of those heavy weights that when we're told that the car and the new iPad and all this shit is going to save you, when that's an agenda, that's a story. We are to be saved. File me under to be saved.
Yeah, right.
And all these things and the right relationship and the right blowjob is all going to get me there.
Yeah.
That's your agenda and it breaks your heart and it doesn't work, but it's a spinning plate and it's a lie that we're all agreeing. As Ram Dass says, I won't mess with your ego if you don't mess with mine.
Yeah.
Just let me stay in this dream. It's good in here. I want to eat chocolate and I want to take a meaningful bowel movement in the morning and that's going to be me. When you realize you are not filed under to be saved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just saw Anomalisa and it really broke my heart because I was like, Charlie, stop waiting for someone to save you.
Right.
Is what I wanted to say to Charlie Kaufman, the guy who wrote it. I was like, come on, man. Give me something that says, and then I realized this wasn't going to save me, and then I realized I didn't need to be saved in the first place. Get the fuck out of my face. I'm sorry. That movie was gorgeous. And
I didn't
maybe
see
I'll
it
change
yet.
My opinion on it. But I was like, I don't need another thing telling me the heartbreak of there is no thing.
Right.
There is no thing that's going to save you.
Right.
You walk upon yourself as a path and knock upon yourself as a door, and what you reveal to yourself shall be revealed.
Do yourself
a
favor.
The shit.
That is the shit. This is the Daniel Johnston quote. Do yourself a favor. Become your own savior. Have you ever heard that? It's a great song. But this is the... Yeah, man, I love what you're saying. It's so good. And this is another...
I'm talking to myself.
We should just call this fucking podcast Ram Dass Quotes. But that's what it's devolved in. But,
I don't know why people aren't as obsessed with Ram Dass.
Oh, they will.
I think
it's just people aren't aware that there exists this like wonderful form of spirituality that's so perfectly articulated by such a genius. But this is another thing he says, like when you're sitting at the puja table, for those of you who don't know what a puja table is, it's you just construct a little table in your house and you put on it pictures of beings that inspire you, maybe pictures of beings that don't inspire you that you feel like animosity towards.
Right, to work on that.
And you work on it. So, but he says, you're sitting in front of the puja table, this isn't Be Here Now, and you're feeling despair. And you think to yourself, oh man, this is a... This is a great flavor of despair, isn't it? Oh, yeah.
Do people even get out of this kind of despair? I don't know.
Yeah. Right. And you realize there's something delicious in it. There's something that's really quite satisfying in it, and that you're actually enjoying it. And this thing that you're so beautifully talking about is eventually, when you're done eating despair sandwiches, you realize that there's a lot of other types of food at the buffet, and that you get to pick which one you want to eat, and that you don't have to be in the role of the person waiting for the hand of God to come from the sky and lift you into paradise.
This is getting in touch with your own sliver of divinity, of being like, my awareness is the same as my dog's awareness, is the same as a plant's awareness. Alan Watts talks about rocks even having a low level of awareness, because if you bang them together, they make a noise sort of thing. And that's their way of being like, yoo-hoo, I'm here sort of thing. He's like, that's even a type of intelligence. But like the despair of being so sad, and I don't know if people get out of things like this. It's the identifying with it, as opposed to Eckhart Tolle, when he like woke up, or whatever you want to call it, was like, broke out of it. I can't stand to be with myself any longer. And he's like, who? When you're feeling sad, and this works. I'm an anxious person. And when you're anxious, you go, who is observing the anxiety?
Right.
That's you.
Right.
Watch the anxiety. Go, shit. That is, I have this philosophy in my life where I go, good episode. The episodes of your life are where shit goes weird or unplanned. Right. You don't want to watch a TV show where everything goes fine. That's Entourage. Nobody wants that. You want to watch a show with twists and turns and conflict.
Right.
And so when I'm having a day where I was driving to Irvine, I got a flat tire, I was already going to be late, I'm going to miss the show. And, you know, that sounds kind of not a big deal, but I'm like, it's not just a show, it's a lot of money that I'm going to lose. And
right.
I need that money for my rent or whatever it is. So it's feeling dire. And then you just, when you say yes to even that,
right.
You can go, good episode. And motherfucker, I'm not telling you the story of the time I drove to Irvine and didn't get a flat tire. I'm telling you the one about the time I got a flat tire.
Ah, that's awesome. It's the worst story. Dude, I want to tell you.
Yeah.
The other day.
Yeah.
I was driving to Irvine.
And I got there.
And I got there.
And you know what happened? I pulled into a gas station. I don't even know where I was. And I saw this woman that I know. I was in the middle of, it might as well have been nowhere. It was somewhere between here and Irvine. I don't know anyone in that area. And I saw this woman I know named Guru. Her name's Guru.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah.
Her name is Guru. She gave me a ride.
Right.
Well, unbelievable. And she was a huge fan. I got her tickets to the show. Everybody won. She had a story of the time she and I, and we had a nice conversation. She's a lovely woman. I see her all the time. But she happened to be at the gas station that I pulled in. I'm not talking about serendipities and everything is a meaning. I'm saying everything happens and I'm giving it a meaning. I'm saying yes to it. I wasn't resisting.
This is what you're talking about there, that specific form of miracle, audacious miracle, and really kind of cheesy miracle. In bhakti yoga, there's a lot of different books about Krishna and the different ways that Krishna likes to interact with his friends. And one of these books is called the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's really a cool book, but, it's really fascinating because, you know, they say God can interact with you as your child. God can interact with you as your friend, God can interact with you as your guru, God can interact with you as your lover. But so to me, I've noticed in miracles in particular, and what happened to you, as far as I'm concerned, is a form of miracle, is you will quite often find woven into a miracle a very specific kind of sense of humor. And from that, you can extrapolate the personality of if you want to allow yourself the wonderful fantasy that these miracles are being delivered to you as a form of playfulness from some super intelligence.
In the way that when you're on mushrooms, you're like, this thing is fucking with me.
Yes. Yes. And it's cute.
It's cute.
It's specific. It's like in the way I know your sense of humor.
Yeah.
I
know mushrooms' sense of humor.
Right. And I think mushroom's sense of humor is the sense of humor of the transcendent truth.
Yes.
And when you realize that its sense of humor is kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's really kind of goofy.
Well, Terrence McKenna talked about it being almost like a Groucho Marx shtick.
Yeah.
And he was talking to the mushroom. He was tripping his balls off, is another way to say that. And he asked it something about where it lives or something. And what was it? It made some stupid joke like, hey, when you're a mushroom, you travel light or something
that.
Like,
yeah.
Like a dad joke.
Yeah, it's that's it. That's it. Which is kind of fascinating when you consider that God is always referred to as the Father. And then you realize that
and then he has a dad
these
sense
miracles
of humor.
Have a dad sense of humor woven into it, which is like, oh, yeah. Someone named Guru is going to take you to your show.
Yeah.
It's cheesy.
That's
it's cheesy. Like someone writing it. They're like, okay, so listen, let's do this.
It was almost too much.
We're going to do a script about Pete, and we know Pete is on a spiritual journey, so and he's going to learn a lesson when his car breaks down, and the moment he surrenders, imagine this in a writer's room.
Yeah, bad
if
pitch.
If we were in a writer's room, and I'm like, dude, what if the person who picks you up, their name's Guru?
Yeah.
That's a flat line in a writer's room. No one's going to laugh. There's going to be a crinkling of paper.
Right. This isn't for the Hallmark Channel. You know what I mean?
Get
out of here.
Dude, or stop. You know what, Duncan, don't come. I think you're getting too stoned in the writer's room. You're getting too stoned.
Yeah.
It seems like something someone super stoned would conceive.
Yeah.
Or it seems like something a child would conceive. That's the other quality of it. It's a childlike, audacious cheesiness that gets attached to these kind of miracles that are happening. And when you let yourself believe that this is a super intelligence delivering these messages to you and that the super intelligence has a childlike sense of humor.
Right.
Whoa,
that's amazing.
Fucking wild.
But I think whatever it is wants us to go back to that place.
Yes.
We took mushrooms on Christmas Eve, Al and I, and we ended up in one of the bedrooms that it was a child's bedroom before and we didn't change anything. So there's still this light that's made out of like paper flowers that projects paper flowers everywhere, the shadow. And then on the ceiling were stars and moons and stuff. And we just laid in there like babies. It was so safe and simple.
Yeah.
And we were just overwhelmed with this feeling of like, this is here? You know what I mean? Like, oh my God. It was. And I turned on the water and I put my hand in the water and I was like, it's warm. And Val came over. It just felt kind of like the sort of thing that would also have a silly sense of humor.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, be babies.
Yeah.
Be babies. Feel that feeling you felt when you were a baby and you knew your mom, God, was downstairs and it'll be up in a minute to get you up and feed you. But for now, just lie there and know that everything's okay. And here's I'm going to share two mushroom epiphanies with you.
Please.
One was, I said to Val, I was like, I love you, but what's wild is it loves you. Because what mushrooms for me does is it really solidifies this idea that there's a breathing, living presence everywhere.
Yeah.
And what's so great about these substances is you take them and everything that you believed is real. And you don't just know it, you become it. That's that idea of it's not knowledge, it's wisdom.
Yeah.
So you're living in it and you're like, and you're seeing it. So instead of thinking like, I think everything's kind of alive, man, you're seeing the walls breathe. You're watching a tree glisten and move and it looks like it's handing you something. You're like, everything's real. So when I said to Val, I love you, but it loves you, she knew. And then this one's a little bit cheesier, but it was such an epiphany for me. Was I always say, I'm stuck in here. I go, I'm stuck in here. I can't help it. I love the oft used metaphor that we're the light. We're the slideshow and we're the light. And the slides in between the light and the wall is my personality, is my intellect, is my clan, is my country, is my education. All that's just kind of like slides that they're all shining through all of those. But I'm the light. So I'm always like, I'm stuck in here. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I'm on your podcast. I'm talking a lot. I'm sorry. I'm stuck in here. I don't surrender to it, but I just know me pretty well. I'm with me all the time. But then I was like, I'm stuck. Am I stuck? And the experience said to me, your body isn't trapping you in. It's hugging you in. So and again, that sounds so saccharine or something. It's not even a teaching that I'm proud to share, or I don't want to engrave it in anything. But when you felt it, it was Han Solo in The Force Awakens going, it's all real. You know what I mean? Like you're going, shit, the Force is real.
Yeah.
And your body isn't holding you down. It wants you here. It wants you to go through this little ride.
It's all a big hug, man.
Yeah.
and it really is fascinating when you realize that. And then you start getting into the question of, well, who's being hugged?
Right.
And who's doing the hugging?
Right. And who's downstairs?
Yeah.
And who's Valerie?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're both babies on the bed and we're having this shared experience. And I'm like, I know I'm here and she's there. But when you're on mushrooms, it feels very much that you're just like, no, it's here. And I'm wearing the clothes. I don't mean literally my clothes. I mean my body. I'm wearing the clothes of Pete Holmes. And I play the part of Pete Holmes. And it is...
That thing you're talking about is so wild, man. And that... I can remember the last big mushroom trip I had, which may very well be the last mushroom trip I have.
How much did you take?
Oh, man. It wasn't a huge... I'm very reactive to mushrooms. Mm. And I've also noticed that... I just am very reactive to those things, but I was high. I was so very high. But what happened was at some point in the trip, I was like, wait. I forgot something. What was it? Okay, wait, I'm remembering now. I'm remembering this thing that I've been doing. Oh, wait. Oh, I'm a human being. Oh, I've been...
This thing I've been doing.
And it's like, I've been doing this human being thing. Oh, yeah. Whoa, I'm doing a human being thing right now. And what I was prior to coming back into myself, I have no idea, man. Mm. That's where it gets wild because there's a veil mm-hmm. where whatever I was back there, mm-hmm. I don't know. But when I finally came back to myself, it was a quick feeling of like... Hold on. I've been doing this thing.
I
do something. I do human. I do a human thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm human.
Right.
Fuck. Damn it, I'm human.
Rami D told a story of having an experience where he said for 3 hours on LSD, everything stopped existing. Like it just, he was in the void.
Yeah.
And he wasn't afraid. It's kind of like I was saying, when you close your eyes, if you can love the experience and continually say yes to the experience and yield and surrender and all that stuff, he went into the abyss and he was not, and time was not, and the earth was not. He couldn't even fully explain it. And then he said he took it in this little room. Him and Tim Leary would go in this little room that you had to climb down a ladder.
Oh, yeah.
And he said there was a woman staying there with them that he didn't know very well. But when he climbed up, she kind of like screamed and started touching his feet and crying.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that later she said when he came up, all she saw was light.
Whoa.
So this person isn't even tripping.
Oh.
So like pure light came up.
Wow.
And so it freaked him out because he didn't even know her and he had come back to his area code.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, Tibetan Buddhism. I think it's Tibetan Buddhism. It's called Dzogchen. Dzogchen. Dzogchen.
Mm.
Anyway, this has been explained to me a little bit. The concept is, and I love it. And I don't care if people don't believe it because it's fucking cool.
Yeah.
The concept is that awakened beings, when they die, like if you're fully awakened, you transform into rainbow light and dissipate. Mm. It's really nuts.
Yeah, but I've heard that told many times. Like when, I think it was when Ramana Maharishi died, they had the light thing. When George Harrison died.
Rainbows.
Yeah.
And it is. And I'll tell you, man, I have, one time I volunteered at a hospice. And have I told you this story?
No.
Boy, oh boy, I volunteered at a hospice not knowing what the fuck I was getting into. I was just like, I'll sit with dying people. And so I volunteered at the hospice, sat with some dying people. And it's not always sitting with dying people. Like one time, and it was not like, I was not the main person. I was like, you know, lowest rung volunteer, just going there if they need
That's
me.
A low rung.
Some people need you to pick up like, you know, food or whatever for them and just bring it over and not come in, which would be weird because you'd bring like a bag of food to a door and leave it there. But on the other side of the door, you'd hear people screaming in pain from whatever was killing them. But, or once there was this woman, she was an actress. She was this beautiful actress. I wish I knew her name. She has pictures, all these old school black and white pictures of herself all over the wall of her house in Santa Monica. She's laying in bed, oxygen. I wish I knew her. I wouldn't know her name, but they were saying she was a famous actress. Mm. I can't remember her name or semi, whatever. So I'm standing next to her bed, and I say to her, I don't know what I'm doing. This is years ago. I don't know what I'm doing now.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I was like, how you doing?
Yeah.
And she looks at me and goes, how does it look? but then the light thing, man, The last person I sat with was a woman who had Alzheimer's disease. And man, that was intense. I would go and sit with her. I sat with her a few times and I saw her degrade from being able to walk to being on oxygen. But she would sit next to me and her like, and just lean her head against me. And once she took me into her room and showed, she couldn't talk, but she was just pointing to pictures of her kids because, you know, that was important to her. But when she was finally dying, I was sitting with her and you could see her physical body struggle against what was happening. So she was on oxygen and she would let go. She would surrender this thing that we're talking about. Mm. And every time she did that, there were flowers in the room. And I remember every time she let go, the flowers seemed to start glowing. Like everything in the room brightened up. Everything got just this, it was beautiful. Wow. Like a light was just filling the room. And then when the resistance would come, it would go whoosh, and would go back in and was completely exactly the way it was before. I saw this happen like three times, this kind of strange respiration where her soul or whatever was anyway, man. So there's something to the concept of us as a light body being imprisoned or constricted or held or hugged inside the light bulb, this flesh light bulb. Mm-hmm. It's
right. Line up with the light, not the bulb. That's a Joseph Campbell thing, too. Yeah. Well, something that trips me out lately is Ram Dass talking about reincarnation was saying, if you light a candle with another candle, is it the same flame? That one's been tripping me out lately.
Whoa.
So this candle's going out and we light a second one. Is it the same flame?
Whoa.
You're welcome. That one will bake your noodle. I do want to say, though, talking about all this surrender, right? So we're saying when you're in traffic, when you're dying, when you're realizing the car isn't the answer, why don't we wake up? And the truth is we don't want to.
Yes.
And the truth is that I don't want to.
Me either.
Because we are addicted to the highs and lows of the game.
That's the rushes
of the game. And that's what Ram Dass talks about. We let go of it incrementally. But the truth is, I think we both know this. I love being me. I love the thrill. Somebody just asked me, like, we were at fucking Cafe Gratitude, and they were like, what makes you happy? And I was like, you know what's crazy is for all this stuff, and I love meditating, and mushrooms is certainly my definite number one answer. That's my happiest. But in life, in this trip, when Judd Apatow agreed to direct my pilot, that was,
wow.
It was ecstasy. You feel.
Fuck yeah.
You feel. And that's when I'm in those moments, when you get this rush, and it really is similar to a Kundalini sort of feeling.
Yeah.
It's just Christmas Eve inside of you. It's the 4th of July. And you're like, that's why you resist. You don't want to be nobody.
Right.
You want to be somebody.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be everybody. You want to be you.
Yeah.
And you want love given to you. And I even think on a certain level, you want heartbreak. There have been days where I'm like, she dumped me and I want to eat ice cream and have a scotch and be sad. And we're addicted to the rush.
Yeah.
And we don't want to give up our possessions. And we don't want to Jesus. And we don't want to leave our families.
No.
Talk about, I think it's my favorite Bible verse, and it used to be the most confusing one. It would be one that I would jump over, was that I didn't come to bring peace but a sword and to turn brother against brother and a man against his family.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? We're talking about the price you pay. You lose. Buddha left his wife and child.
Yeah.
Pete has more conflict with his parents than he ever has because he's a fucking weirdo New Agey guy. They don't say that. They love me very much. But you start to feel what the price of freedom, it really
selflessness.
Yeah. And you don't want to be selfless. You love being you and you you don't want to let go.
We are in our terrible twos. You know, like I have the most beautiful, perfect nephew. of all time. And this kid, man, he's two, and he's the sweetest boy, but he's in his terrible twos, which means he's learning that he can hurt things. He's learning he can keep things for himself.
Yes.
You know? So it's so cute because, like, he wants to keep things, and no matter what it is, he'll say, mine. This is mine. Mm. And they say that kids, when they get to like late threes or fours, they start learning to share again. Mm. And suddenly they turn into, they can't. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, some people never learn to share. But kids, they'll turn into these very sweet, beautiful beings because suddenly they start sharing with other kids. And it's a really cool thing to watch something go from a constricted state of this is mine to, okay, this is for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at. And what you're talking about is that's it, right? It's like we've got to figure out a way to not just give up our toys, but to give up our lives. Mm-hmm. Everything must be relinquished. Right. All must be given to this hilarious sweetie that's Dad been playing with us. Yeah.
Right.
We've got to do it. That seems to be it, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that is it. And it's not easy.
No, it ain't.
It's not easy to let go. We love our specialness. But the great thing is, Rami D coming in again. But you have to be somebody before you can be nobody.
Right.
And it's not a flaw in the system. We're born, probably in that early stages, we are feeling some of that interconnectedness. I do think babies are kind of in a trippy place.
Yeah.
And then we remember our separateness and we forge our identities. And that's where feeding the plain view comes in very handy. And that's where the Yeti picks you up and protects you.
Right.
And he takes you places and you learn. It's almost Pavlovian. You learn, do this, be exceptional, and you will get exceptional things. You like first class? You like hot fudge sundaes? You like blowjobs?
Yes.
Do you want a VIP area at Bonnaroo?
Yes. I don't know who you are, but I love you're awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, remember the correlation. Your somebodyness got you this blowjob.
Right.
And you go, got it. And your stupid brain, it's not stupid, it just knows cause and effect. It goes, the more special I am, the more Michael Jackson I am, the more private jets I get.
Right.
And that's not me. I don't fly private jets. But you understand what I'm saying.
Sure.
Then we think, though, that's, again, everything's tits. Everything's tits. You want the tit? You want the tit?
Yeah.
Be special. Be special. Yeah. Be special. And what we're saying is you can suck your own tit. And you can be in traffic and quiet yourself and wake up. It's not The Price is Right. Bob Barker doesn't have the answer behind the curtain.
Yeah.
You need to laugh at what am I doing in this studio audience?
Right.
I can't believe they called my name. I can't believe I'm playing this game. But there's a lightness and a joy that's available to surrender if we have the courage to surrender, which is very hard. It's very hard. I don't get too much affirmation to surrender. I get it from, what do they call it? Darshan with you. you know what I mean?
Likewise.
I definitely get it from you. I get it from Ram Dass. I don't get it. My Siddhi is my intellect.
Right.
That's something Rami D.
Siddhi is, for those of you who don't know, that's a kind of like, I don't want to say magical, but it's a sort of paranormal, supernatural. I don't want to say supernatural either. How would you describe Siddhi for people?
A Siddhi would be reading somebody's mind. Right. So you're right. The thing that I like about using your intellect as a Siddhi, it's a very base Siddhi. Everybody has it, but you can sharpen it and use it. And that's what Ram Dass does. He's great at metaphor.
Right.
He's great at performance. He's great at writing. So that's his Siddhi. And then I realized, I was like, oh, that's one of mine. It doesn't have to be prophecy.
Yeah.
I can get my spirit off through ideas. And that's not everybody. Some people need a symphony. I happen to get off on conversation and that sort of stuff. But you get those glimpses, but it's like, I've said this before, but they say that going for a run is the same as having a cocktail. And to that I say, I don't have a bottle of jogging in my freezer. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing. I know that the spirit is rich and vital, but I am addicted to winnable games. I'm addicted to small instant gratification, and I will take the lesbian porn jerk off cocktail.
Yes.
Before I'll take the go sit in your room and tap on your face and try and align this bullshit and get your spine straight. I don't have a jog in my freezer. I do have vodka. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So it's hard, and that's why it takes practice, and that's why we need to remember what we're working for. And this is something I came here wanting to tell you, and I think you're going to like it, and it's very short. Why do we want enlightenment? Why do we want freedom? And what does it even feel like? I think I had this epiphany recently. To me, it's an epiphany. Again, it goes to dreaming. I always have the dream that I'm in high school, and I'm always in the same... It's a dream high school. I have dream landscapes, and I go back to them. You do, too.
Yes.
Whether or not you remember them is a different
thing. No, I do.
But there's cities and places. I have a New York that doesn't exist.
Yep.
I know where the subway is.
Yep.
I know where my apartment is.
Yep.
I know where the restaurants and the grocery stores are.
Wow.
They're places. And I also know my high school. So I'm back in my high school. And it's always the same, and everybody, I think, can relate to this, and that's what's important, is you have the dream that it's finals, and you've been skipping all year. That one class.
Yes, for me.
It's like social studies or math. And what am I going to do? Geez, I'm going to fucking fail. I can't fail. I need to get notes. I need to find out. Maybe I'll go to the class. Maybe I'll skip. Whatever. You're panicking. For me, it happens lucidly, but anyone can relate. When it happens lucidly is I realize I'm dreaming while I'm still dreaming. And then you go, I don't need this. I don't have to go. There is no class.
Right.
This is all just baloney.
Yeah.
This is all nothing. I don't need this book anymore. I'm not in high school anymore. This is all fake. And it's this relief. I'm going to sneeze.
Perfect timing.
I know, right? Relief that washes over you. And it feels like putting down two suitcases filled with bricks. And that's what I think enlightenment is. Mm. When you wake up from a dream and you go, I'm not in high school anymore.
Yeah.
And you realize there is no test. You don't need these notes anymore. It's actual joy. It's actual bliss. It's actual relief. And these are things we feel in our nervous systems and in our hearts. But that's why I'm enlightenment. That's why I continue to toy with the idea that whatever happens, real Bhagavad Gita stuff, whatever happens, I'm still here. And that whatever happens in front of me is the lesson that I'm to learn. And what am I going to get from it? And was it in my narrative or was it not in how I intended things to go? It doesn't matter. There is no test. I don't need this class anymore. I'm going to fly away. When Ram Dass took mushrooms for the first time, you know this, he went and shoveled his parents' walk.
Yes.
Because there was a snowstorm and he was feeling a love for his parents. It's like 4 a.m. They open the window and they go, what are you doing, you goddamn idiot? And he just smiled at them and kept shoveling snow. And he heard a voice in his head say, right on, baby, shovel snow. There is no test. There is no 4 a.m. There is no good or bad time to shovel snow. It's all baloney. It's all, I won't look at the elephant in the room if you don't look at the elephant in the room. And when we start to wake up, we go, there's an elephant in the room. And it's so funny. And it's so vibrant. And it's so alive. And it's juiced. And right on, baby. Shovel snow. It's okay. You're okay. You don't need the iPad to tell you you're okay. That's what it feels like. I'm not in high school. I'm not in high school. It gives me the chills. I'm not there anymore.
Right.
That's a make-believe thing.
Yeah.
You say 3 o'clock it ends and 8 a.m. it starts and I have to finals and grades. It's all bullshit. My teacher, my class, it's all nonsense. And you can play it. You can be the student. But you also can know it's all right.
And don't forget to suck the elephant's tit.
The final disappointment. Isn't that good? David Nichter.
So cool.
David Nichter.
I love it. I love it so much, man.
Enlightenment is the final disappointment. It's not, I can't, that is what I think I'm taking away from this, is that is not what's behind the curtain. Enlightenment, you're there. We need to surrender the idea that something is going to save us, because every great master that does the work says, you're already saved. You're okay.
Yeah.
I feel like all of these teachings, all this unconditional love can be boiled down to, you're okay.
And here's one to throw out too. Don't forget this one, which I love to think. This thing that we were talking about, the unspeakable enlightenment state.
Mm.
Here's one to think about. you might not be able to understand what it is at all. Right. And anything that you think it is wrong. And your mind can't comprehend what it is because your mind just isn't able to get around that corner. Because we're talking about a singularity. And it's like this thing you don't know.
That's right.
Mother of novelty. That thing which... Here's another crazy concept. Imagine this one, Pete. And I hope I'm not keeping it too long. We've gone over...
This is what I'm doing today.
So, cool. So, here's another crazy concept. I have had a vision of God while I was stoned. Happened a long time ago. In traffic, actually. Driving back from the gym. I'd eaten too much marijuana. Shouldn't have been driving. I was in my car, and suddenly I had this vision of this being that was constantly dying and constantly resurrecting itself. And every time it resurrected itself, it was a million times more beautiful, a million times more beautiful, a million times more beautiful. And it was doing this in the moments between moments. Mm. It was doing it so quickly. Mm. It was this constant, never-ending super spiral moving in the direction of absolute perfection. But the direction it was moving in was also perfecting itself. And so we were looking at this thing that to even talk about what it is to prognosticate.
Right.
It's to talk about the future.
Don't yank it. Don't try to lasso the moon.
Yes!
I say this all the time. Leave the transcendent where it belongs. Transcend it.
Yes.
Your mind isn't... We can use the mind like a city, like a power, to help us get rid of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the place where all of this stuff makes sense is a mindless place. It's not, it's a non-dual place.
Yes.
It's a transcended space. It's a trans-rational space. What does that all mean? So I just did a talk the other day at a little seminar thing, and it was about public speaking, and my friend asked me to come, and I did it. I talked about stand-up, and I talked about the principles of stand-up. I didn't lecture. They were asking questions, and I kind of answered some things. And I talked about, one thing I talked about was posture, and when you fold your arms, you can look scared, and people like to feel comfortable, so they want you to look comfortable, basic stuff. Then I did a set that night, and I realized that I might have been crossing my arms, that I wasn't even following my own advice.
Right.
And I wondered, because some of the people that were at the seminar with the show, what they might have thought of that. And no one asked me, but my response was, I don't think about any of this stuff. You know what I'm saying? You become wisdom. You have knowledge. You become wisdom. So when we're like trying to get into our heart place outside of our minds, then these things have a shot. They're not going to make sense. It's not going to make sense. Your pot vision shouldn't make sense.
Right.
It shouldn't fucking thank God for that stuff.
Because
this agony that you and I are feeling about reality, I feel it all the time. And I talk about this too, so forgive me if I've said this to you before. But the despair of like, what, am I going to touch things? Am I going to touch a table? Am I going to breathe air? I'm going to eat something? We're going to laugh? Are we going to remember it? At night, am I going to go to bed? What the fuck is this cycle that I'm stuck in? It's horseshit. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But what were we talking about before that? Because that just sounds like despair. But that's the brain place and getting into that. Transcending this and going to the place where things don't make sense. Thank fucking God for God. Thank God for the unwinnable game.
Yeah.
You can light a cigarette. You can drink a drink. You can jerk off. These are winnable games. But I am dying for one. Thank God it's so challenging. Thank God it's so desperate at times. Thank God it's so joyful at times. I'm tired of Amazon One Click. I'm tired of ice cream sample, and I'll take that one. These things that just rush our systems, and we get them, and we go, check, 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 sex, check, money, check. Uncheckable box. Unwinnable. Can't find it. Can't touch it. But you can merge into it, leaving your brain behind. Mm. What a counterintuitive. It is counterintuitive. My thing lately is, I think if you ask the great masters, at some point you have to surrender your intellect to really get into that space, to merge into oneness. And I think the answer is a fucking course.
Yeah.
A ridiculous notion growing up evangelical. We were all like, you don't have to check your brain at the door. This stuff does check out. Look, Josephus wrote about Christ at the same time. And there are these coins that have Caesar. And that's what he's talking about. And the Herodium was when he said you can move a mountain.
Yeah.
Herod was moved. Who fucking cares? I don't... We need to even surrender that. Ultimately, everything.
All toys must be shared.
All toys must be shared. My! fine. My faith makes sense. It checks out. My God has this many followers, and I know. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Thorn in your leg. Use another thorn to get that thorn out, and then drop both thorns. What I want is less, not more. I'm using these teachings, these ideas, and these thoughts so I can realize that as passionate as about this one, I used to be passionate about another one.
Yeah.
And guess what? Something's going to replace this.
Yep.
And ultimately, I'd like to go where Ram Dass went, which is just, it's all play. It's all a dance. It's all okay. Don't you see? You guys think you're in high school.
Pete Holmes. Hare Krishna, my friend. What a beautiful way to close it. Thank you. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you, man.
All right, that's it, pals. Big thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. You can go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. Thanks to all of you who use the Amazon portal, who donate, and who listen. I love all of you. Don't forget to let your cat sleep on your chest tonight. Hare Krishna.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.